Good morning, Wisconsin. Good morning, world. It's a new day, and thank you for kicking it off with us right here at 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR, locally grown radio. Got your host, James J. behind the mic. I am joined by Melissa K.
Good morning, good morning.
Seth Habacker.
Good morning.
We're here to have some fun. We got good stuff coming up for you. Some entertainment news, talk a little bit about Tony Bennett and some other stuff. We're going to get into that story a little bit later about what these kids nowadays just don't.
they're missing out on.
Yeah. They're missing out on.
They're hula hoops.
All of that is coming up for you, but it's Monday. It's the 9 o'clock hour. You know what we like to do here. Something good.
Welcome to the Kitchens Open on WFHR. We have a fun and perhaps slightly controversial segment for you today. We're going to talk about the history, lore, and songs around beer.
Songs!
And why is this controversial? Beer is life. I mean, not for me, but for some.
H.A. Dare, I say Bud Light.
Ooh, that old scandal.
Yes, well, it does seem rather like old news in the 24-hour news cycle, but the fallout is still in progress. We'll get to that later in the segment, as well as the songs. Don't worry, James.
Oh, boy.
History first. See, I'm learning.
Yes, the old dog, new tricks routine. I knew you'd come around.
Who are you calling a dog?
Oh, calm down, you two. Maybe you should just have some beer. Might make you feel more mellow.
It's 9 o'clock in the morning, Melissa.
But it's 5 o'clock somewhere. And where have I heard that line before?
You know, as far back as we can trace history, there's been beer.
I guess if you're going to be eaten by a saber-toothed tiger, you may as well be drunk.
Actually, beer had a really low alcohol content for most of human history.
That's right. Intoxication wasn't the main purpose. Fermented liquid was a valuable food staple and often the only safe liquid to drink when clean water was rare.
And it provided an important source of essential vitamins like vitamin D. This was vital for poorer people who lived mainly on porridge or bread. Beer was practically health food.
Some people still think it is.
Historians don't know for sure when beer was discovered, but it probably happened around 10,000 BCE in the region known as the Fertile Crescent.
That's an area located in northern Africa and southwestern Asia.
If you know your rivers of the world, the Fertile Crescent stretches from the Nile River in Egypt to the Tigris and Euphrates rivers in modern Iraq.
Show off. I could have known that.
That is where some of the first human settlements developed, and they began domestication of the wild cereals growing in the region. Of course, they grew them for food, but they probably couldn't help noticing that when grains got wet, they fermented. They discovered that the fermented water in the grains made a tasty drink.
Oh, now I remember. I like beer. No, I don't like beer. The song by Tom T. Hall, I Like Beer.
Oh, great reference, a great song. It makes him a jolly good fellow and makes him feel mellow.
Speaking of songs, it's likely that the first written recipe for brewing beer comes from a song, the hymn to Ninkasi, who is the Sumerian goddess of beer.
Oh, wow. Can you sing it, Melissa?
No, but I found it on YouTube, but it was just a guy speaking it in English. Oh. However, I did find a duet of a Sumerian drinking song, and that will give you an idea of what it might have sounded like. Why don't you play a little bit of it, James?
All right, here we go. This is Lorna Guyver and Silver Lyre Project.
This is a reproduction of an ancient lyre. And this is actually an ancient hymn to the beer god, goddess Ninkakis. It's just not the recipe.
It kind of sounds like they were drinking the beer they were singing about.
But let it play a little bit longer because we got to get to the chorus.
Oh, okay. Ah, there's the beer drinking.
There it is.
There it is.
Duk sik dak duk sa ya.
That's where it sounds like they're drunk, there, right?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Now we got it.
It's really good, yeah. though. Great singers. Great singers.
So you heard it in the refrain there. Kashi, 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 kashi. That means to drink.
Oh, okay. Well, the first evidence for ancient beer drinking is in a pictogram. It comes from Mesopotamia and dates back to about 4000 BCE. Historians know it's beer because the two figures are drinking from a large pottery jar through reed straws. The straws were needed because ancient beer had the grains and other ingredients still floating on the surface and probably some muck at the bottom. They drank it right out of the jars they brewed it in.
Correct. And this became a symbol of friendship and trust. By drinking from the same vessel, the host was showing his guest the drink wasn't poisoned or of low quality. That custom persists to the present day.
In an article on thecollector.com, it states, people still drink beer from the same vat, tea or coffee from the same pot, or a glass of wine or whiskey from a shared bottle. When drinking alcohol with family, friends, or colleagues, the clinking of glasses symbolically reunites the individual glass into a single vessel of shared liquid, reminding us of ancient drinkers from the long history of beer.
And here I thought the reason was to enjoy the drink with all five senses.
What do you mean?
Well, you can see it, smell it, taste it, and feel it, but it's harder to hear it unless you clink your glasses. It's a symbol of good cheer, but I find the symbol of reuniting the glasses into a single vessel rather quaint.
Mm-hmm. Beer was so important in ancient times, it was used as a currency. It was even the first guaranteed income program. Get this, the famous Code of Hammurabi decreed the ancient citizens of Babylon would receive a daily beer ration. Common laborers would receive 2 liters a day, while priests and administrators would get 5. So beer actually fueled the labor that built some of the most iconic buildings in world history.
My gosh.
Wow. Egyptians also really love their beer. It says here on thecollector.com that Egyptian records mention at least 17 kinds of beer, some of them referred to in poetic terms. They remind us of advertising slogans such as the beautiful and good, the heavenly, the joy bringer, the plentiful, and the fermented. Also, I want to put a quick note about Egyptology here. You would always find the bakery and the brewery right next to each other.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Because of the yeast, because mm-hmm. they both used yeast. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's early examples of ad campaigns.
Maybe. I do like the joy bringer. I like that as a beer. Maybe, but the ancient Greeks and Romans weren't buying it. They'd had finer palates and enjoyed wine. My people, the Greeks are not my people.
Sorry. They're close to the Italians.
They are. They and I like them. Shout out to the Greeks. They viewed beer as the drink of for barbarians.
Perhaps, but the Romans did bring the beer brewing process into their empire, especially in the northern limits where it was hard, if not impossible, to grow vineyards. The popularity of beer began to increase during the Middle Ages.
Now, I personally find it rather ironic that the first breweries in Europe were run by Christians.
What?
It's true. Monasteries were places of medieval education and repositories of knowledge. Monks were responsible for modernizing the brewing process by adding hops. They also used hops to flavor the beer, but then discovered that hops had preserving properties that kept the beer fresh for longer periods of time.
Also, monks spent a lot of time fasting. Strict monastic rules didn't allow eating during a fast, but the rules didn't say anything about beer. So they had a good reason to make an excellent brew. Monasteries were also a safe place for travelers to stop, and beer was served as a welcome nourishment for weary travelers.
Beer went through a difficult time after that, with people trying all sorts of recipes on their own. But in the 16th century, the Duke of Bavaria, Wilhelm IV, introduced the Reinheitsgebot, or beer purity law, in 1516.
Yep. The law standardized beer production. The only acceptable brewing ingredients were water, hops, and barley. They even took out the yeast for a while.
Hmm.
That remained in place for the next 471 years.
Ooh.
It wasn't repealed until 1987.
Wow.
But the law was really only followed in Germany, Holland, and Belgium, especially in more recent history.
The popularity of beer continued to rise. let that sit there for a second. The invention of the steam engine sparked the Industrial Revolution in 1765 that kicked off the industrialized beer brewing process.
Now, let's jump ahead to the 1920s when beer production was threatened by prohibition in the United States. Consumption of beer and alcohol was illegal in the land of the free, quote unquote. Prohibition ended 13 years later in 1933, but around 1,200 breweries went out of business. That left only about 100 that survived.
Now, one of the ways the big brewing companies survived was the production of what we would call near beer, or beer with less than 0.05% alcohol. They had to produce other things too, but Americans got a taste for watered-down beer. I mean, beer with a lighter flavor profile.
During Prohibition, alcohol consumption actually increased for wine and spirits, but fell by two-thirds for beer, according to Patch.com. Full-flavored beer was harder to conceal.
Then, in March of 1933, Congress modified the Volstead Act to allow the production of non-intoxicating, low-alcohol beer and wine with a maximum of 4% alcohol by volume.
Now, the general public hadn't tasted full-strength legal beer since 1917. Consumers wanted the lighter, less filling beers.
In response to demand, brewers reduced the amount of hops and malt in their beers by half between 1948 and 1969. Then again, between 1970 to 2004, hop content fell another 35%.
So bland beers dominated the market.
Yes, and for the last two decades, the top-selling beer in America was Bud Light.
Remind me again why it's no longer number one.
Okay, James, let's go through the Cliff Notes version for anyone who was not paying attention. That includes me, because honestly, all I knew before about this situation was basically the right wing was mad because Bud Light sent a trans person some beers and she made a commercial. So conservatives are boycotting the company.
That's basically it in a nutshell. What actually happened is Bud Light sent Dylan Mulvaney one can of Bud Light with her face on it to celebrate her one-year anniversary of publicly identifying as transgender. It was part of their March Madness contest, and they sent cans like this to hundreds of influencers to promote participation in a $15,000 contest.
Now, backstory. Dylan Mulvaney is a 26-year-old Broadway actor who played Elder White in the Book of Mormon before the pandemic. During the pandemic, she came out as a trans woman and about 2 years later began documenting her transition on TikTok. She has more than 10 million followers, and her video series, Days of Girlhood, has received over 1 billion views.
Conservative media and personalities mounted a slew of online attacks targeting Mulvaney for her transgender identity, and they're calling for boycotts of the companies that have partnered with her, Mulvaney. This has backfired somewhat as other celebrities are supporting her and the company. And I have to point out that the beer companies, these outraged Americans, quote unquote, are switching to have long supported LGBTQ organizations.
This includes Miller Lite and Coors Light. Their parent company, Molson Coors, sponsored Pride Fest events throughout the 1990s. They were one of the first companies to offer same-sex domestic partner benefits beginning in 2000.
Heineken featured Neil Patrick Harris as their first openly gay ambassador in 2014 and sponsored New York City's Pride Parade in 18. The state on they stayed on their website, "At Heineken, we stand by our values, notably respect for people. We understand that creating an inclusive environment that values the contribution of all employees is the only way in which everyone can feel they belong, including members of the LGBTQ community."
We could keep going down the line with the big beer companies in America. At one time or another, they have all donated to LGBTQ plus initiatives.
And the kicker is, the beer that has replaced Bud Light as the number one selling beer in America is Modelo Especial.
Yes, Modelo Especial was first brewed in Mexico City in the 1920s. While the New York-based beverage company conglomerate Constellation Brands has owned Modelo's selling and marketing rights since 2013, Modelo is brewed exclusively in Mexico and imported into the U.S.
Seriously? So the most popular beer in America now is made in Mexico? That's a little ironic.
Side note about Constellation Brands, who owns Modelo. As recently as 2022, they were discussing their Stellar Pride Business Resource Group. Here's a quote from their website. "Pride is a time to celebrate and commemorate the LGBTQIA plus community and how they've always been interwoven in our society to its benefit. It's also a time to reflect on the progress we've made and the work yet to be done."
And another fun side note, Constellation Brands invested $4 billion in a Canadian company that produces medical marijuana in 2018. So it sounds like they don't have plans to include THC in any of their products until it's fully legal in the U.S., though.
So this is just another example of inciting and hijacking outrage to further an agenda, ignoring all the facts.
Yep.
You got that right.
So, if I may, I think we should sum up this segment with some poetry and verse about beer. I'll go first with these lines from one of the greatest poets of the 20th century, William Butler Yeats. This is from The Old Stone Cross. "A statesman is an easy man. He tells his lies by rote. A journalist invents his lies and rams them down your throat. To stay at home and drink your beer and let the neighbors vote.
Wow. Well, those three lines really kind of sum up this whole segment very aptly, I must say. But I do disagree with the last line, however, and I encourage everyone to get out and vote. It's the most important thing you can do as a citizen.
I agree with that.
Yes.
Now, on a lighter note, here's an old Irish tale by an unknown author, only slightly modified for radio so we don't get trouble. Some Guinness was spilt on the barroom floor when the pub was shut for the night. Then out of his hole crept a wee brown mouse and stood in the pale moonlight. He lapped up the frothy foam from the floor, then sat back on his haunches, and back on his haunches he sat. And all night long you could hear the mouse roar, "Bring on the gall darn cat!"
Oh, I like that. Oh, I never heard that one. I like that. Well, my friends, this leaves us with no choice but to end with the rewrite by Wise Homer of the famous song sung by on a mountaintop. Start us off, Melissa.
Do the stuff that buys us beer. Sing, guys.
Ray, the guy who brings me beer. Me, the guy who drinks the beer. Far a long way to get beer. So I'll have another beer. La, 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 beer. Tea, no thanks, I'm having beer. That will bring us back to...
Don't!
Thank you, Homer. Thank you all.
Homer
thank
Simpson.
You. Thank you all. Thank you.
We need to close this kitchen. Yes. Thank you for joining us on another segment of The Kitchen's Open here on WFHR. As always, we appreciate hearing from you. Message us on Facebook or email me at melissa.k@civicmedia.us. And with that, we'll close the kitchen.
Let's close with Tom C. Hall singing I Like Beer.
Or to the point, roll out the barrel. Like beer, it makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer, it helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Makes me feel mellow.
Poets often use many words to say a simple thing. It takes thought and time and rhyme to make a poem sing. With music and words I've been playing. For you I have written this song to be sure that you know what I'm saying.
Of course, the legend, Tony Bennett right there. During the pandemic, Tony, along with a lot of artists, tried to entertain people. They were stuck at home and doing different things. And this is a recording from Tony performing from his house to entertain his followers on social media and everything. I remember when he published this, and I remember tearing up a little bit at it. It reminded me of my papa singing this song, Fly Me to the Moon, and the way my nana would look at him during it. And I think for a lot of us, that's the thing about Tony Bennett. Is that you attach him to a memory of a loved one? Mm-hmm. For a lot of us younger people, and it's not often I get to say that we're younger guys. So, but with this one, in part and everything, we didn't grow up with big band sound and a lot of that jazz movement and everything that was going on there with the Rat Pack and Tony Bennett and some of these acts. We didn't get to see that time, so we got them these guys as elders and statesmen and everything, and got to see them have a little more fun with their careers in some ways.
Yeah.
Right. You know,
I think even Sinatra in some ways got to have some fun. Sammy Davis Jr. was loving life, just having a ball up to the end of his life and everything. And Tony Bennett, I believe you can say the very same thing.
Yes.
And I believe you can say that because Tony Bennett will tell you that. Tony Bennett, of course, passed away last Friday. We got to hit on this right away. The news broke right as David and I were jumping on the air with Hour 3. And there's a couple of notes I wanted to touch on regarding this. First, passed away at the age of 96, a few weeks shy of his birthday. Shortly after the world learned that the voice behind I Left My Heart in San Francisco, Blue Velvet, and countless other classic songs had been silenced, his team shared some details about his final days. Quote, Tony left us today, but he was still singing the other day at his piano. His account says they posted a photo sharing a throwback photo to Tony's earlier career. His last song, everybody, Because of You.
Aww.
It was the last song he ever sang or he performed. He did it right there at the piano performing. Enough for those that don't know, this was his first number one hit. Mm-hmm. So it's very full circle.
Very full circle.
Very cool moment.
Yeah.
The team added, Tony, because of you, we have your songs in our hearts forever.
Yeah. Mm.
We mentioned on West Country 105.5 all these country artists coming out and showing respect to him. Of course, tons of other people have as well. I think... You know, out of all of this, it's been very interesting to hear Lady Gaga talk about him. Mm. She grew up like I was talking about, like I did, like many of you, especially if you grew up in an Italian household. You don't know just Tony Bennett. You know Tony Bennett's DNA. Like, you know everything about Tony Bennett.
Right.
It's in TVs and movies, they kind of use Sinatra or Dean Martin as the guy.
Right.
Every Italian household I've ever been in, Dino, sure, but Tony Bennett was the guy. Tony Bennett was the big one in the Italian soundtrack of the household. And Lady Gaga, of course, an Italian, grew up loving his work, and she just wanted to meet him. She just wanted to get to know him. She meets him, and his first words are, "I'm a huge fan of yours."
Wow.
And they start singing together. Oh, like, cool. Hey, we actually got a pretty good rhythm here. Hey, this is pretty good. So they get the idea to want to work together. But Lady Gaga doesn't know at the time, nobody does except for Tony and his people, that he is struggling with Alzheimer's. He is dealing with the first stages of this. Mm-hmm. So she breaks her schedule in half, continues to, like, flies to New York and all these different things when she's filming As a Star is Rising and all this. For over 2 years, they worked together to make this project happen. Tony had lucid moments in the day, so she would change her schedule to go out there to film to do that. I did not know all the work that she put into to make this happen, make that album happen. It just shows respect, shows a lot of love that she had for him, and it's pretty interesting. Tony released more than 60 albums from 1950 to 2014. 44 of them hit the Billboard 200. He also won 16 Grammys.
Wow.
He survived an overdose. He had so many other cruxes and issues in his life that he was able to make it to this point. Tony marched with Martin Luther King Jr. in 1965, raised millions for juvenile diabetes, received a Kennedy Center honor. His paintings are in the Smithsonian. he's more than just a wonderful voice, everybody.
Yep. He did a lot.
That's one of the
inspired a lot of people.
One of the greater human beings like we've had, let alone. And you've never heard a bad word about him.
No.
You never heard anybody say anything bad about Tony Bennett or working with him.
And it's so cool that he got to live long enough to see all this, you know, be able to do stuff with younger artists, to be able to see, you know, people, to tell them, you know, no, Tony, you were a big influence on me. That had to have felt really nice.
Yeah.
Over the weekend, Elon Musk did another thing that you'd expect a seventh grader to do. on Saturday night, I'm sorry, I shouldn't say that. That's insulting and that's not fair. I shouldn't do that to seventh graders.
No.
Seventh graders don't deserve that. Well, I want to apologize.
They're still figuring out their lives.
Yeah, I want to apologize to all the seventh graders out there. That's not fair to be clumped in with Elon Musk. I shouldn't do that. He's changing Twitter's logo, apparently, from a birdie to an X.
An X?
Yeah, I don't know. It's not clear if this has anything to do, but Elon and Grimes had a son whose name is such a bunch of nonsensical letters and symbols that they just call him X. There's no way this has anything to do with him, like, honoring his son or anything like that. He put this out there on social media, asking for people to give them a new logo, because he wants to change the logo, apparently, because why?
Okay.
That's going to help?
It ain't gonna get those billions back, I'll tell you that.
I don't think rebranding Twitter is going to help him.
No.
I just don't think so.
Quit calling people smart that are bankrupt before our eyes. Quit calling a smart business person somebody who has been bankrupt multiple times. We're throwing these words around here and everything.
They just have the money to pay for it.
Yeah,
it's true. They can fall back on it.
It's pretty easy when you're born with a set of silverware in your mouth, not a silver spoon, a silverware in your
set,
mouth. It's really easy.
Service for eight. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Show me the Warren Buffetts. Show me the people that Warren Buffett maybe is the best example, but show me the people that truly had nothing and built themselves up.
Yeah.
Well, let's champion that a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Big weekend at the box office. I don't know why I sounded like Bob Dylan there.
big.
Greta Gerwig's Barbie raked in a stunning $155 million domestically over the weekend.
Wow.
Giving the film the largest opening weekend of 23 and the biggest ever debut for a female director.
Wow.
The combined release of Barbie and Christopher Nolan's Oppenheimer, dubbed Barbenheimer, has become a pop culture sensation and one that might receive a revive a struggling movie industry. Barbenheimer was the fourth highest grossing industry weekend of all time in North America.
Wow.
Totaling $302 million Sunday. Analysts believe it will grow even more when final numbers are reported today. Coming in behind Barbie was Oppenheimer, opening at $80.5 million domestically over the weekend, according to ComScore. Both movies essentially doubled predictions from weeks ago.
Wow.
It's unprecedented to not only have two films do so well, but also to help each other with the Barbenheimer trend.
Yeah.
These
people
movies
were going
each
to
other.
Them together, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
They've been trying for over two decades to get you to the movie theater. They've been trying and trying. We put amusement parks in there. We're letting you drink in there. We've got beds in movie theaters now. How about
massage chairs?
How about instead of spending $50 million on a movie, we spend $200 million on a movie? How about that? Is that going to get you? Instead of just two stars, how about we give you a movie with 80 stars in it? Is that going to do it? Nothing works. This did it.
Yeah.
This
all you need
it.
Is a kid toy and, you know, explosives.
Right?
There you go.
I genuinely think, you weren't off there, Mel. Honestly, like, they did this organically. The society created Barbenheimer.
Right.
It wasn't a marketing idea. Mm-mm. It wasn't a thing like that.
Because they didn't market them together.
No, no. They were deathly afraid. Actually, both directors reached out to the other and talked about, hey, are you moving your movie? Are you moving your movie? Like, because they were worried
Do
about...
Do we want to have the same movie?
Yeah. There's a chance that they almost didn't do this. Mm-hmm. And this doesn't even happen. And I don't think that either movie does nearly as well without the other.
Yeah. I think you're right.
Now, because this happened organically, I don't know how you as a marketing
recreate it.
Yeah, I don't. But this is what worked.
Yeah, this amazing.
I saw this from some friends of mine over the weekend. The biggest grossing weekends of all time all involve the Marvel movies, Avengers, Endgame, and this and that, and then this and the Barbenheimer. It's like at the number four spot.
Wow.
I got the next one, Polly Pockets and Nagasaki.
Yeah, there you go. Done. You're welcome. You're welcome, entertainment
We're
world.
We're here for you.
Toys and atomic bombs.
Yeah,
there you go.
It seems to be it seems to work. There is one thing that we should talk about with Oppenheimer that has been getting a little bit of heat for, that they've been getting a little heat for. There's a scene where some people are waving American flags. And they have 50 stars on them.
Uh-oh.
And it takes place in 1945 when we didn't have 50 states. So
that's right.
There's been a little bit of that.
Shame on you.
Yes. Christopher Nolan should never direct again. Yes. How dare he?
He had two extra stars.
Yeah.
How did he miss that?
I bet you Melissa wouldn't have missed it in her news. It's coming up right here. Mel's news right here. We'll be back more fun because we got to still get into when we come back 10 things from the 80s, 90s and that Gen Z is totally missing out on.
Oh yeah.
All right.
That's what we're coming back with on the morning show at WFHR.
Love that's fresh and still unspoiled. Love that's only slightly soiled. Love for sale.
Who will buy?
Who would like to sample her supply? Who's prepared to pay the price
for a trip to paradise? Love for sale.
Welcome back, everybody. Morning show here at WFHR, locally grown radio. Thank you to Miss Gaga and Mr. Bennett there. That was very nice of them.
Very nice.
We got some fun going on here with Melissa, Seth, and James, and let's dive right into this, everybody. I've been waiting for, let me see, when did I get this article? July 18th I got this. I've been waiting since then to do this with you guys. There's a thread on social media where millennials and Gen Xers are talking about the things that, from their childhood that Gen Z never got to experience. And here are a few of the highlights. Let's get into these.
All right. Okay.
Not having all your screw-ups forever uploaded to the internet.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There, I don't think we, like, had any idea how lucky we were that just like a couple people saw you make a mistake.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like, and that was embarrassing and that like, oh, you never thought you'd get over it. No, I got to go to school Monday morning and this happened or whatever. Like, I feel very silly now looking back at that compared to how it is for younger kids.
Exactly.
Parents that let their kids run free.
Yeah.
So I think that there should be more context to that a little bit.
Yeah.
But, I do think that I do get what they're saying. I think I get what they're saying. I think that we all do. That you know, it used to be come home and the lights are when the street lights come on.
Yeah, exactly.
Or something like that.
Mm-hmm. My brothers and I used to go play in the woods for hours.
Yep,
like we would just be gone for the day. We'd take a lunch. And then we come back at supper time.
Yep.
Yeah. I can't tell you how much we did that stuff. And my mom and we all got great parents. Like, I hope none of this comes across like
it wasn't
it's
neglect.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was, like, no. They weren't worried.
Yeah. I don't think we had. It's not that things didn't exist then that exist now so much as I don't think that the information was as prevalent. I don't think it was as accessed by everybody as it is now. It's not as if, any of the big fears we have as parents didn't exist for 100 years or something like that. Certain ones are newer, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the overall concern has always been there.
Yeah.
Musical involvement. This is interesting. Spotify has made everything so available that it's destroyed a sense of connection. When we were only buying a few CDs every year, you got to know those albums inside and out because you only had, you know.
That's it, yeah.
You're rotating through three of them.
Yeah, exactly.
You knew every word.
Remember when they had that, when they came out with like the six CD changer on your stereo, man? Oh, man.
I somewhere in my parents' basement still, it doesn't work, but I still have a 5-disc boombox that had two tape decks.
Whoa!
It was one of the first things I bought my first real check. And I was never prouder in my life than walking with that thing into my house and having that thing in it.
Oh, so cool.
They're missing a better part of this, though. I agree with that part, but I mean, I think they're missing an even bigger part of this. And I looked ahead and they don't have this. I agree with the musical involvement part, but on the other level, hey, you guys, I got this great new album that I heard. I got a bunch of new songs that I really like. I made you a tape each. Here.
Yeah.
I made this mixtape for you. You just got to check this out. Hey, that sounds really good. Could you dub that for me? Does anybody even know what dubbing means anymore? Does anybody like... And I know this was illegal.
It's a dance step, James.
I know it's not necessarily the most, honorable thing as far as for the musicians and those things. But man, did it make a connection. How much of me... I can't imagine how many songs I would have never heard if it wasn't for my buddy Chris. Like, that kind of thing.
To me, that's just it. Think about... that's like advertising, though, for those bands. Because who knows if you would
go out and buy the CD.
Exactly. If you became a big fan of them, you never heard them. That's the only way you would have heard of them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've heard a lot of artists, quote unquote classic rock artists like Robin Zander from Cheap Trick and some people talk about how with this big clampdown on bar bands doing covers and everything, for them, the musicians, at least the way he was saying it and everything, that's advertising to them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like a band is going to do it better.
Right. Right. Yeah. That's a really solid point, actually.
Yeah.
But somebody hears I Want You to Want Me and maybe they never heard it before and like, that sounds like a great song. I'm going to go buy that Cheap Trick album or whatever.
And their uncle at the table. Yeah, I saw that band back in the day.
Yes, exactly. That is definitely what comes right next. That's definitely it. Similarity. Checking the TV guide and getting excited about a show or a movie that'd be on later in the week. Having everything on demand kind of ruins that a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Takes the anticipation away somewhat.
Yeah, right. But on the other hand, you know, then the TV goes on the fritz. Oh, no, I missed the show. Yeah. You know, something like that.
You had to go to the bathroom when the TV came
on. I can't hold it.
If you missed anything, good luck.
Yeah.
Or you got to wait until summer for a rerun or something
like that. Oh, my gosh. That reminds me of something they used to do on shows all the time. The clip show.
Yeah.
Wow. Because people didn't have a chance to go back and watch. They would show the best bits on a show. They'd have a framing story around it. Everyone did a clip show. I mean, that's way in the past now.
Now we just see it on YouTube.
Yep.
The excitement of getting back developed film.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
See how the pictures turned out.
I remember that.
God, that was awesome.
I honestly remember more the disappointment of
realizing
that I was a terrible photographer with my little, rectangle shaped 1-inch by 6-inch by 2-inch camera.
It's funny. The photos we're getting nowadays are cool and they're really amazing, and almost everybody's got a nice camera on their phone. But I expected those photos back then with that cheap little cardboard box thing that you'd get. That like, I don't know why I expected any Leibovitz level photography from this little thing. But come on, Kodak, come on.
Or the Tower of the Light Towers that you would have on those disposable cameras
because
each bulb would go out. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I love that those still have a use at weddings and things. I think that's really
cool. Yeah.
I think that's cool. AOL Instant Messenger.
I never used that.
That was the first, though. I remember that.
Yeah. I don't think I used it either, but I do remember
it. It was very popular.
They don't have it on here, but when I think of AOL, I think of those CDs that we'd get. A 1,000 hours of internet or whatever it was.
Yeah. And all that stuff and everything. They were everywhere. Yeah.
Parents not having HD security cameras.
Oh, God. Yes.
I hadn't thought of this.
No.
That's new. With like doorbell cameras and all these things. Man, Chris and I would have had a real hard time sneaking out. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Oh, my. I never thought of that.
How about the tracking apps on your phone?
Dear God. That's right. Oh, that's right. Yeah. I would have never gotten away with anything. I would have been a good kid. Browsing the video rental store.
Yes.
Oh, it would take for a long, especially if you have to find one for the whole family. That could take a long time. Yeah. Let's watch it. No, I don't want to watch that. No, we'll watch this one.
There was one summer where they had a special at our video store. It was 10 movies for 10 days for $10.
Oh, wow.
And it was a super hot summer, and we had air conditioning. We had a window unit in my parents' bedroom. And so mom moved the TV in there, and we rented this $10, so we just basically spent several weeks that summer just watching movies.
Yeah.
Nice. Great memory.
Remember the feeling of you really, 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 really want to see this movie. It's a new release. You really want to see it. You get to the video store, and they have it. And they have it. And you're, yes! And you have that. Yes! Even though they got like two copies, and you got one of them.
Yeah, right.
The feeling of that. Oh, it felt so good.
Well, and remember, they always had the cardboard cover sitting in front of the actual movie.
Because that was in the plastic case.
Right.
Yep.
Without a cover, it just had the title on the VHS tape. But the worst was when you walk up and you have like six copies of the cardboard cover, and there's no plastic ones behind
it. They were out. Yeah, everything was out. Yeah.
So my first job, second job actually, was at Deja Vu Video here in town. It's no longer here, of course, or anything, but longtime listeners out there remember that store. And we had the cardboard boxes out, but you had to grab a tag, a tag and bring it up. And so, of course, every once in a while it would happen where somebody would just grab the boxes and bring those up, and then you'd have to go put the boxes back or something like that. How about real actual boredom? You were forced to be creative, learning instruments, drawing and painting, writing terrible teenage poetry, all of these things. I think people still do that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
They do, but I remember you could actually be bored. Mm-hmm. You know, you could actually just be sitting around doing nothing.
I read a lot as a kid, so I don't know that I ever actually was bored. And also my Grandma Ruth said if we ever said that we were bored, she'd put us to work.
Right. Oh, that's my parents.
My dad.
Oh, you're bored? I got something for you
exactly.
to do.
I'll never forget my cousin Lisa coming up from Chicago to visit us, and like she's there for an hour or two, and she starts like throwing her head back. God, I'm so bored. And the smile on my Nana's face. Oh, the big smile. Really? Put her to work.
Yeah.
And
not bored anymore.
Finally, not being connected to everyone on social media, and better for better and worse, and being able to disconnect in general.
Well, I'm not on social media, so I'm still there. I'm good.
That's another one of those ones that I feel like they were kind of reaching on that one a little bit there. Yeah.
But sometimes, every once in a while, I try to do those things, though. Like, for instance, I'm sitting at waiting for something at an appointment or whatever. I try not to pick up my phone. I try to just sit there and be for a moment.
That's nice.
And be like, yeah, okay, I remember
relax
what this feels
bit,
like.
Yeah.
I did that at the ER on Friday. I sat down. I'm like, I know I'm going to be here for a while. So, of course, I grabbed my phone. I'm like, no, no, wait. I set my phone down for a second, and I just kind of took in the moment. Enjoy the atmosphere, the just being in the moment.
Just being. Yeah.
It's an ER. There's people talking to themselves. There's stuff going on and everything. It's not exactly, I'm not watching a sports
You're
event
not gonna
here
meditate.
Or anything.
Yeah.
Right. But I can at least be in the moment. Mm-hmm. Sometimes being in the moment isn't about just because it's a special moment or it's a unique or meaningful moment. It's just taking those moments.
Yeah.
Well, and especially when you're in the state you were in, you know, you're in pain and that sort of thing. But every now and then, even if I'm having, you know, a bad moment or I'm in pain or something like that, I just stop and realize, you know what? I'm gonna take this moment because
at least I have it.
Yeah, I'm experiencing something. No, it's not pleasant, but I'm experiencing something, you know. And every now and then, just to kind of take inventory about things like that, it can have a pretty profound effect. Yeah.
You live every moment until you die.
Exactly.
Pain lets you know you're alive.
It's true.
It really does. Just like laughter and so many other feelings and emotions and that. We are going to keep this topic open.
All right.
Like, there's no closing of this topic. 424-2600. I don't care if it's 2 years from now.
Nostalgia's forever.
And you want to bring something up about this. This is your audience. This is your team, people. Go ahead and bring it up to us. Otherwise, we'll take a quick commercial break. Come back with the Then A Right story, some local good stories of the day, and plenty more on The Morning Show at WFHR. Welcome back, everybody. Morning Show here at WFHR, locally grown radio. Seth, Melissa, and James here with you, and it's time for us to dive into a That Ain't Right story so we can get some good stories of the day. Have warning labels become so common they are pointless now? There are warning labels on everything these days. Virtually every product has a long write-up with red lettering about how dangerous it could be. It wasn't always this way. There were a few warning labels back in the 1960s when they started going on cigarettes. Then other products followed suit. And things went really crazy in the 90s when everyone started filing lawsuits. Now, researchers are worried that they were so desensitized that no one ever reads or even notices warning labels anymore.
They're not wrong.
So they're basically pointless.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
One expert says they become ubiquitous. If everything is in the supermarket is labeled as dangerous, you don't know what to buy. This means that companies can't rely on people reading through all the warnings so that they may redesign some products to make them safe for consumers. Like, for example, requiring someone to pull a lever and push a button to start a lawnmower rather than having it start with a turn of a key.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah.
It just ain't right, man. I mean, that we've gotten to a point where warning labels don't even, like, have their meaning anymore.
Yeah, they've lost all meaning. That's kind of weird, yeah.
And this is one of those ones where there is no villain. There is no bad guy on this one. You can go ahead and point the finger at this and this, but you can go ahead and counter and point at this and this. This is one of those ones where we all got a little dirt
We've evolved to this point.
Yes.
Well said. Yes. I don't know. I mean, I just thought it was very noteworthy to talk about. That's for sure.
Yeah.
I'm not pointing the finger at anybody or anything on this one.
Do you know when people read the warning labels? After they've already hurt themselves.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, 1,000,000,000% yes.
Oh, barn door open.
Rats. Shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
Here's the real true That Ain't Right story of the day. A 24-year-old man in Pennsylvania named Dominique ordered 3 cakes from a grocery store with photos of himself printed on them, which is pretty That Ain't Right to begin with.
Yeah, why are you doing that? Weird. Yeah, okay.
Then he went through self-checkout and did not pay for the cakes.
What?
He stole them.
Oh.
How?
He bought some candles, some canned items, and some cupcakes and paid $12 for those, but then ran off with the cakes that were, you know, like would have been like $80
yeah,
bucks or
special
whatever.
Order.
And stuff. Yeah. Police are still looking for him, but it's only a matter of time. They ID'd him based on the security footage of the cakes. So he hid his face, but he did not hide his face on the cakes.
Well, and also the bakery department had his photo.
Yes.
I mean, it's just, oh man.
Oh. You know, at least they give us reason to laugh at
them. I mean, not thought through.
They also have his previous mugshot because, yes, shockingly, this is not the
He's
first time.
Criminal record? No way!
Yeah. I'm shocked.
I needed this. Yeah. I needed this story. I needed it. It hurts to laugh, but I don't care.
I mean, I guess if you got to be a criminal, stealing cakes.
You know, that's pretty minor. Yeah, you know, especially cakes no one else is going to want.
Right. Who wants to eat your face?
got some local good stories to get to. I don't know if you heard about this one over the weekend. A Wisconsin woman who has held the Guinness World Record for the largest collection of Winnie the Pooh memorabilia since 2008 said her collection is now up to 23,632 unique items.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Shout out to Waukesha's own Deb Hoffman, who first earned this record back in 2008.
Wow, way she's still go, going. Deb. Going strong.
Keep going, Deb.
Yeah.
Keep going.
That's
pretty
a
cool.
lot of different.
Yeah. yeah.
23,000 separate Pooh. Things?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
and no repeats?
No repeats. That's pretty impressive. We Jeez. Got some other local good stories going on today. This one ties perfectly with our Civic Media Blood Donation Challenge.
That is correct. We have a community blood drive today at the former East Junior High School Music Room. My appointment's at 2 o'clock, so I hope to see you there. yeah. That's when the appointments kick off. 2 o'clock, they will go until 7 tonight. Mm. They do encourage appointments, so call 866-566-5900, or you can just walk in and take your chances. Mm. But they want to see you down there, the Blood Center of North Central Wisconsin. And this ties into our blood donation drive with Civic Media, which is hashtag Civic Pints.
Yes.
And if you take a selfie, well, somebody remind me I need to do that.
We'll send you a text, yes.
And so take a selfie while you're donating and hashtag yourself on your social media platform. And then also go to civicmedia.us/giveblood and fill out our form there. You will automatically be entered for potentially Brewers tickets, which I learned today's baseball.
State Fair
tickets, also Civic Media swag. And if you also tag us on there, you'll get Rafters baseball tickets.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, just tag WFHR on that, and along with the hashtag Civic Pints. You can put it on any of your social media or go right to their website, civicmedia.us/giveblood.
I do think you have to fill out the form to get entered for the prizes, though.
Yeah, be sure to do that, everybody. Yep. Seth has got something for us, too.
Tomorrow night, there's only two left, everyone. Yeah, yeah. The City Band will be having their next to last, their penultimate, Woo! If you will,
Wow!
a concert at Robinson Park, 7:30 tomorrow night. And then August 1st is the last one. So if you have not been able to get to one yet, we do strongly encourage you to do that. It's an amazing band. They always put on a great show. Check it out, Robinson Park, tomorrow, 7:30 p.m.
And there's ice cream.
Yeah, the State American Legion Baseball Tournament is going on today and tomorrow at the new Wisconsin Rapids Quadplex on 16th Street South near the football field. Today, game at 4 between Appleton and Middleton, and then at 7 with the Ramblers, our Rapids Ramblers, taking on Eau Claire. Winner of these games will advance to the championship game on Tuesday at 4. Come out and check out the Ramblers. And, of course,
cheer 'em on.
You've got Rafter Baseball going on. Not now, but coming up. Yep. We've got the All-Star Game going on, though, so shout out to all of our Rafters that made the All-Star Game.
Yeah.
Find out more at northwoodsleague.com. Amazing show, you two. Thank you so much.
You too, brother.
Thank you, everybody out there, for listening. We'll be back with more fun tomorrow right here at...
From the hometown of NASCAR's Dick Trickle, locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM, your news talk and sports station.